Good evening.
Good evening.
Good to see you tonight. Happy that you're here, Mike. Wonderful lesson. Appreciate that. Those three crosses are, it's just a very powerful symbol. I remember many years ago, and I'm thinking it was Hurricane Andrew that struck down south, maybe in the 90s. Don, maybe you can look that up for me. But, okay. And I remember my home congregation at that particular time had a couple semi-loads of stuff going down to those folks. When they ended up in the heart of the devastation, the destruction, the carnage, a good friend of mine said, you know, right in the middle of it, he says, the funniest thing, he says, you looked around you and you saw just total devastation. But he said, off in the distance, you saw three crosses. They were almost untouched. It's like they were untouched in all that. Now, not someone didn't come in and put them up. But, you know, they were bent over a little bit, but they were, you know, they stood strong through all that. And when you mention the three crosses, I just think we think about a powerful message.
1992.
Thank you, Don. And but anyway, so happy that you're here. We do have visitors with us. We want you to know you're our honored guest. We are studying this book, and we have visitors. You're probably going to need to borrow a book. So if you need a book, raise your hand, and I'll make sure you got one. Okay. Now, for the next piece of news. Some of you have approached me that are full-timers in this class. I didn't say old-timers. I said full-timers in this class. And you have misplaced your book. And you still need to follow along. So let's play the game. Let's make a deal. Okay? I have loaner books for you, but I have to get those books back after class.
So you take the driver's license.
Thank you. We got to work out something here. You're right.
$100
bill. Right. you're thinking like a sixth century Christian, Carl. So, but if you need to borrow a book, please make sure I get it back. Your book's out there somewhere, okay? And you'll find it someday. But let's just make sure. And the reason that is,
you can order it from Amazon if you want another one for $14.99.
Thank you, Don. And there's that too. There's that option. You can order one from Amazon for almost $15. Or get it on your electronic device as well through, is it Kindle?
It's a Kindle.
Kindle. Okay. Okay. So, you know, we got all kind of answers here. You know, this is better than opening up a fortune cookie and reading it. Okay? But if you need a book, I can make sure you get one. So some of you have approached me, and I don't want you to go without. You got to be able to follow along, folks. You know, I don't want to give you an excuse for sleeping in my class, just like to sleep on Sunday morning during my sermon. So, but anyway, so does anybody need a book? Going once, going twice. Gary, you need to borrow a book?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You had that, I need to borrow a book, look in your eye. All right, there you go. Anybody else? All right. Well, here's the thing. We've got like three or four books left. I think in the middle part of March, we're going to have a recess. We're going to pause our class for a while. The ladies are going to have a class, Patsy, and that's a good thing. The ladies need to have a class, we're going to take about a quarter off, and then we'll go back at it again. Okay, but I have a feeling when we start up again. Okay, warmer weather is going to bring some folks out that's probably never been a part of the class, and they'll start attending, and we got to have some books. Okay, so anyway, Earthcart's good to see you. Good to have you back. All right, let's go ahead and begin in this book. Last week, guys, we were looking at chapter 10 in this book, The Growth of the Episcopacy. Thus far, we have noticed a very flawed function with regards to the structure and the organization of the church. For example, with regards to bishops, at first they were viewed as equals. Okay, that's the New Testament model. Okay, there's not one that's above any other. Then all of a sudden, monarchical bishops began to arise. A chairman, if you would, of elders He would gain power. Now, Don, I know, has expressed this and explained the way we basically work things here. We have an elder of the month, and he's just a point man. That's all he is. As far as to keep things decently in order, and you have information you need to share, you work through that elder. He gives you announcements. He's the point man.
He's our coordinator.
He's coordinator, okay? And so if you happen to come and you don't understand the structure of the way we do things around here, you may walk away and not understand and say, well, I remember attending, I think it was the month of February. I think Mike Wilson is like the bishop of the church, of that church, okay? If you're looking at the way the structure came about with the Catholic Church, okay? But that's the way we run things here, Mike. We have, you know, equal authority, if you would, equal powers. But that began to change. 325, guys, you can mark that on your calendars. 325 A.D., the Council of Nicaea. Things begin to change. Constantine, Roman emperor, begins to be heavily involved and heavy-handed in making decisions for the church. Issues begin to arise. Topics begin to arise. The nature of Christ, the work of God, of Christ, the Holy Spirit. And there were other things that began to make its way to the forefront with regards to things they needed to discuss. With that came bits and pieces of church organization. And you begin to see all of a sudden elders are no longer equal. You begin to have a chief elder in a province over other churches, perhaps out in the country, you see. Things are changing. And this is the 4th century at 325. 341, Julius, bishop of Rome, he lobbied that the dispute, Arianism, there was a debate, should be handled in Rome. And he referenced which apostle as proof? Peter. Well, everybody knows that Peter is the first pope. He's the first pope, and Peter is responsible for the church in Rome. And everybody knows that this should be done in Rome. Any and all discussions of this nature. 343, the Council of Sardica. It agreed to the retrial of bishops should be held in Rome. And again, this is dealing with the Arian controversy. Peter was, again, he is referenced. Okay, so they're playing the Apostle Peter card. 376, excuse me, Damascus, bishop of Rome. He hired Jerome to translate the Bible into Latin. And he referenced Peter as the rock of the church that the church was built on, as a matter of fact. And Matthew chapter 16, verse 18 was the passage that he used. So this is what we looked at last week. You guys are beginning to see a change. And we just look from what, 325 over to what, 376. So things are changing. Oh,
it's not open.
Thank you. All things in common. Thank you, Melanie. I appreciate it. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Any questions over that? Any comments you give out as we make our way through this? Because things are going to change. Again, remember, Constantine would pack things up and move his power to the east. Constantinople, okay, is where he would move things to. So you then, now all of a sudden, you have Rome and you have Constantinople kind of lobbying for power against one another. Okay, we'll see that in just a little bit. Okay, so keep that in mind as we're going through this. We'll eventually make our way to a section here called a Battle of the Bishops. It's not a board game, okay? Could be, all right? But it was reality, okay? And you've got these bishops, you've got these popes fighting among themselves for power, okay? All right. Let's go into the next section here. Let's continue to look at this. Let's start in our books on page 139. Theodosius, you see that here on page, well, get some folks to help us read, where it says 380, Theodosius, on 139. Let's read that, and let's read over to page 140, where it says, let's see here. I don't want to stop just there. Let's stop where it says the Eternal City at 541. So let's begin there, 380, and let's stop with Eternal City. Who wants to take off and just let's have someone read just two paragraphs? I don't want to overwhelm you. Who's got it? Melanie looks like her hand was, she was half committed. Half committed as good as all committed, Melanie. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Theodosius, I recognize the Bishop of Rome as Pontiff. 150 bishops of the Council of Constantinople gave the Bishop of Constantinople the first place of honor in the church, next after the Bishop of Rome. This gave him control of the church in the East and exalted him over the bishops of Antioch, Alexandria, and Jerusalem. Valentinia, the emperor, agrees to back up with imperial force the decisions of the Bishop of Rome affecting the trial of church officials. Metropolitans had to come to Rome for trial before the Roman bishop.
Okay, someone take where it says 417, the Bishop of Rome, and let's go ahead and finish that out where it says Eternal City on page 140. Who wants to start reading there? David.
The Bishop of Rome tells African bishops nothing should be taken as finally settled unless it came to the notice of this see, that any just pronouncement might be confirmed by all the authority of this see, and that the other churches might from thence gather what they should teach. Notice that decrees from Rome are to take the place of Scripture in determining the truth. In 424, the African bishops in the Synod of Carthage rejected the interference of the Bishop of Rome and reminded him that at Nicaea the Metropolitan had authority in his own district. In 445, Valentinian III decreed in favor of the Roman bishops having universal authority. He said, inasmuch as the preeminence of the apostolic see is assured by the merit of St. Peter, of the bishops, by the leading position of the city of Rome, and also by the authority of the Holy Synod, let not presumption strive to attempt anything contrary to the authority of that see. We decree that nothing shall be attempted by the bishops without the authority of the venerable Pope of the Eternal City.
Okay, and then if I can have someone else to read the last two paragraphs there, because we can finish this whole section out. Who wants to take the next two paragraphs right here? The next two paragraphs. Who's got it? Go ahead. Thank you.
The Council of Chalcedon reaffirmed the decision of the Council of Constantinople in 381, exalting the Bishop of Constantinople. They did not accept the idea of the chair of Peter, but said, for to the throne of old Rome, the fathers gave privileges with good reason, because it was the imperial city. And the 150 bishops, with the same consideration in view, gave equal privileges to the most holy throne of New Rome. They then gave the Bishop of Constantinople the right to ordain the metropolitans in the East, who had the responsibility of ordaining bishops under them. Until this time, there were five metropolitans: Rome, Alexandria, Antioch, Constantinople, and Jerusalem. Rome in the West and Constantinople in the East, however, had risen to greater prominence because of the positions of the cities. And there now arises a conflict as to which of these should become dominant. The Council of Chalcedon had decreed the two were equal.
Okay, so let's go back and let's start looking at some of our bullets here as we go through this, because you're going to start seeing things evolve, okay, or devolve within the church. And so in 380, Theodosius, he says, I recognize the Bishop of Rome as what?
Pontiff.
As pontiff, pope, okay? So all of a sudden, you know, strange terminology is beginning to rise to the forefront. Pope. Do you read that? Do you see that? I see elders. I see deacons. I see preachers. I see teachers. You know, whenever the Apostle Paul is talking about offices within the church or different works within the body. Do you read Pope anywhere? Do you see Pope anywhere? I don't see it. But so we've got Pope being introduced. Okay. Imogene.
Is that how the Catholic Church today arrived at Pope?
Yes, that Imogene, what you are seeing is the infancy of the Catholic Church. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing the very beginnings of the Catholic Church. Okay, That's literally what we're looking at. Okay. And as we're going through church history, you're beginning to see a departure after the first century church. We begin to see, you guys remember, in some of the writings that we had seen, we had evidenced with regards to apostolic writings, apologists in their writings, some of the things that they were writing, and some of the terminology as it's beginning to change, the structure is beginning to change. Now, what I think is fascinating myself is when you go back and you start looking at church history and reading some of the authors and the stuff they wrote in the second century, by the time you get over to the sixth century, I'm sure those guys back in the second century are going saying, what? Seriously, follow it closely, because you're beginning to see still yet, you know, a plurality of elders, okay? But things are beginning to change a little bit, okay? And then you go, and what I mean by change, you might have a situation, as we were looking in some various topics, where maybe a preacher is sharing his thoughts, his ideas on something, but he says, I'm not binding this on everybody else. And the next thing you know, by the time we get to the sixth century, everybody's doing it, okay? Or if you're not, you're at war with somebody, okay? And that's a whole nother period we got to look at with regards to violence as it's breaking out within the church. You go from being persecuted to persecuting. You're going to become a Christian or else, okay? So things are changing. So let's keep this in mind. 381, the West recognizes, this is not in your book, but Gregory of Nazi Anzus as having the first place of honor next to the Bishop of Rome. This happened at the Council of Constantinople. He had control over the bishops in Antioch and Alexandria and Jerusalem. Okay, so that's 381. You're starting to see this. 382, Emperor Valentinian placed his military might behind the Bishop of Rome in a trial of the churches. Okay, now, again, you know, there were other churches out there, but he says, I'm standing behind Rome. Keep that in mind as we're looking at this. 417, the Bishop of Rome addresses the African bishops from the perspective of divine authority. What does that mean? What does that mean? He's addressing other bishops in a position of divine authority. What do you think that means? I speak for God, and you better do what I tell you to do. Okay? That's what that means, right? Going on, 424 or 445, Valentinian III declared his favor of Rome's bishops having all authority. You're starting to see, you know, people picking sides. I'm going with Rome. Who are you in favor of? Well, you know, Constantine, he was a pretty good emperor, and we owe him a lot of praise and credit. And if he felt like Constantinople was a good place for the church to be, maybe we should side with them. Guys, you might be starting to get the gist of the hot topic of the day, the controversy that existed. That's why we're getting into the Battle of the Bishops in a little bit. Don.
Well, since it was all about power, this is really what happened when they were looking to be in charge. And so anytime there's a power struggle, you're going to see folks choosing up sides.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Go ahead, Dan.
Where is the first century church in all of this? Because the disciples were persecuted and wound up dying for the church.
Mm-hmm.
The church was laid out. This is exactly how it's supposed to be structured and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, so by the third century, and all this other stuff is being fabricated,
mm-hmm.
Where is the first century church in all of this?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. You see that there's a mass belief system that is existing within, under the umbrella of religion. You're starting to see this, okay? But however, when you go back and you start doing your research and studying various historians about with regards to what they're writing, then there are fringe Christians who are out there saying, you know, this is so far out there that
You know, and I'm sure they existed, but that the Reformation movement. This is what gave rise to the Reformation movement, is where people finally just said, you know what? This doesn't make sense. We have really gotten off the beaten path. But, you know, the only thing we did was, you know, we stopped putting lipstick on one pig and we stuck another pig up here and we started putting lipstick on that pig. Okay? And because the Reformation period, what you begin to see is, that's not quite right, but let's invent something that stays kind of close and true to it. Okay, I'm going to give you guys a chance to talk on this as well. And then that's why you have the Restoration Movement. It says, guys, we got to really hit the reset button here. We got to go back and look at the scriptures. It's no big mystery. Okay, let's use God's word as our divine authority with regards to how we are to live our lives. Have you ever met somebody outside of the church? Have you ever met somebody who grew up in a structure like what we're seeing here at this particular time, and it just blows their mind whenever you share the way the New Testament church is structured and you throw words out there like autonomy, okay? Autonomy. We're very close. We're very close, and we were reminded of this the other day. We work side by side, hand in hand, with the work in Nicaragua. We're not over them, and we can't confuse that with the fact that we're your masters, and you're going to, at all, Don, you know, we're just assisting you, brethren.
Yeah, what you're talking about is that when I go down as an elder from here, mm-hmm. to talk with the churches in Nicaragua, I make clear to them that I'm not their elder.
Mm-hmm.
What we are doing is we're talking about what kind of support they need and how we can support them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very easy to step into a position. I could go down and say, do this, do that, and they would.
They would do it.
But that's not the way that God planned for the church to work.
Right.
And so we talked to them about their autonomy. We just replaced a minister down there when Marcos Pantoja retired. And
the we isn't the elders here.
No.
It's the we as in we all together conferred, and primarily they did it. But,
Yeah. Yeah, Guillermo, who is their... who is the liaison with Latin American missions, who sends the money in for support, had found two preachers who'd retired from the Panama School of Preaching, who were Nicaraguans, who were looking for a place. And we agreed that we would support either of those if the congregation at Chinandega agreed.
Their choice.
It was their choice. And they picked William... Valicilo. You'll see his name on the front of the bulletin now, because he's the one we're supporting.
Okay.
But that congregation is autonomous. We're providing almost all of their support, but at the same time, we believe that they need to be autonomous.
Well, that's the way it must be. And that's what we're talking about, Dan, whenever we're talking about the structure, what we're seeing in the 6th century church, as to what we're depicting and describing here, is like the word autonomy. Another example of this is Bible curriculum. I had an insurance salesman show up at my house one time, and I'm not exactly sure what congregation he attended, but it just absolutely floored him. He didn't believe me that we or she develop our own curriculum. You know. And have you ever put together any three-ring binders or binders with books before here in the office? Oh, just once. Well, hang around, kid. You'll get plenty more shots at that.
Well, I didn't give it to her early enough, so
okay.
I made my own book this time.
She's our new secretary, so yeah. But you know, I mean, for the most part, and it's not to say we don't get things from Apologetics Press, but still, yeah, for the most part. You know, we come up with our own curriculum. And whenever I shared that with, you know, that insurance salesman, Raymond, he was just like, there's no way. There's no way. You have to have a headquarters. I said, we do. He goes, where is it? I said, heaven. He says, like, really? That concept just blows their minds. You know, so Dan, to answer your question, here's what I would tell you. get involved, dig a little deeper in church history. I've got some books in my office. Whenever you're beginning to read some of these church historians, and they talk about people who are worshiping New Testament in a New Testament fashion. And you know what excites me? There's one little section in there that I remember reading. This has been a few years ago, but when it was talking about taking the Lord's Supper out to their shut-ins. And I was like, man, that was like 2nd century, 3rd century. I was like, there it is. You know, I'm convinced, the ones who are doing it right, they don't get the most coverage. They don't get the most press, okay? And they're not out trying to get the press, you know, in the coverage.
Or underground.
Right, right.
We just want to do it right.
That's right, that's right. Don't you see that? Isn't that something you see even in the Old Testament, you know? Even in the Old Testament. Go ahead, Imogene.
Is Ortega now in power? Does he say you can do this and you can't do that?
Oh, no, he's a member of the Church of Christ. I'm just joking. No. I'm just joking. No. I'll defer to Don. Don, yes. Go ahead and answer that.
Daniel Ortega from the Sandinista Party is the president of Nicaragua. He stole the presidency in the election. They seized all the ballot boxes, and it was amazing. The count came out, he won by 90%, although the polls indicated that he was not going to win at all. So, yes, he is the president. Does he interfere with us and the church? No, not right now. But there is a lot of gang activity, a lot of
civil unrest,
which is why we haven't been down in the last 2 years.
Okay, 541. Thank you, Don. 541. The Council of Chalcedon rejected Rome's sole supremacy. So now this is a good segue into the game battle of the bishops. They rejected Rome's sole supremacy and elevated Constantinople as the rightful place of power for the church. It did not view itself greater than Rome, okay, at least publicly, but equal to Rome, okay? So now we see opposition to Rome. There is a true power struggle, absolutely. Right before your very eyes. And it gets even deeper and even hairier and scarier because you're going to have an emperor eventually to sign on and say, well, I cast my vote with Constantinople and not Rome. Now, what are you going to do about that? You know? So then you got people, well, you know, the emperor's kind of saying that we need to go this direction. And he's got a lot of power. So It's very interesting. Any thoughts, any comments up to this point, that the stuff we just read? Any remarks? Okay. Go ahead.
I'm really glad that they're trying to change what they're trying to put in place.
Oh, as far as changing things? Well, you had opposition all the time. The Arians. We keep talking about the Arians. Okay. Arius was their founder, was their leader, and he was responsible for a group called the Arians, okay, A-R-I-A-N-S, right? So, you know, and their view at that particular time was a different view regarding Jesus' nature, okay? And that seemed to work well for them when they had powerful people in powerful places, but emperors would come along on down the line that were baptized by Arian ministers. And guess what? All of a sudden, that's the cool religion in town now. Okay? So did they have opposition? Was there people that, look, power. Just don't, that is the key, that is the opposite word. What's that?
People trying to make things the way they're supposed to be.
Well, and make things the way that they thought they should be. Okay? So there's a difference. So, but yes, they tried to make things the way they thought that they should be, okay? But whenever you compare this digression and compare it to what Arianism was doing, neither one of them was right, okay? So, and that gets back to what Dan was pointing out earlier. Basically, hey, man, wasn't there just like a remnant out there somewhere? They were just saying,
y'all are just lost. You know, we're just going to, you know, worship the way God tells us to worship and live how we should live. Okay? All right. Let's read about the Battle of the Bishops. Let's see here. Let's begin on page 140, and let's read to the top of page 142, where it says Exaltation of the Eastern Bishop. So, who wants to read two paragraphs for me? Just two paragraphs. Two paragraphs. We'll begin with the Battle of the Bishops. Anybody? Who's got it? Zach.
From the first distinction between elder and bishop, there may be seen a steady development and organization in the direction of one universal head of the church. At the Council of Nicaea, 325, there was effected an organization in the church parallel to Constantine's organization of the Roman government. The patriarchs authorized at Nicaea were given territory identical to that of the provincial governors. Very early, there was developed positions equaling the lower offices in the imperial administration. With this development, it was natural for organizations to move upward. Also, when someone be selected to stand in equal equality with the emperor as universal head of the church. Rome and Constantinople were logical opponents in the struggle, and although the World Council decreed that they were in equal authority, there were forces at work, which favored Rome.
Okay, now remember that last sentence he just read for you, okay? That's critical as we go through this. All right. Zach, take the next paragraph if you don't mind.
In the first place, the prestige of Rome was tremendous in the empire at this time. Valentinian referred to the leading position of the city of Rome in his edict of 445 AD. She was the capital of the city and of the world. Her reputation in the second place was well known in the areas of benevolence and sound doctrine. Much of this is reflected in the correspondence of Clement to Corinth. Further, the tradition was quite strong that Peter and Paul had founded the church, they're sealing their faith with martyrdom. Much of this based on the scriptures, Acts of Peter, and evident pseudo-graphical work of the late 2nd century or early. Nevertheless, the idea that Peter was the first bishop of Rome was early accepted as incontrovertible. To strengthen the position, various passages of the New Testament were explained in such a way as to insist upon Peter's identity as the foundation of the church. For example, Matthew 16:18 is used frequently in this regard from the time of Cyprian, 250 AD on.
Pseudographical is false writings. It's false writings based upon characters in the Bible that you may read that you would say, "Oh, that's biblical," and it's not. It's not biblical at all. It's false. It's a false narrative. Okay.
What did they do? Just do whatever they thought was best for themselves or the people.
Okay. Let me get into that when we talk about Rome. I'll address that when we're talking about Rome and why Rome got most of the support. Because I think that's going to answer your question. Okay? Thank you, Arjun. Who wants to go ahead and read the next paragraph? Who's got the next paragraph for me? Okay. Oh, Raymond, take a turn. Thank you, Raymond. Thank you, Zach. Go ahead, Raymond.
In addition to these, there were other reasons for the rise in prestige of the Roman bishop. Rome had been the mother church for much missionary activity in Western Europe, and it was only natural that these churches, newly founded, should turn to her for their needs. It should not be surprising either that support should come to the church in the capital city from the emperors who resided there. Leo I considered the Bishop of Rome a successor of Peter, possessing the same powers Christ had given Peter and that were not delegated to him. Finally, it must be mentioned that the church between the Eastern and Western churches eventually widened to the extent that many supported the Roman bishop out of resentment to the undue exaltation of the Eastern bishop.
Okay, so you guys beginning to see, as we're reading this, there is becoming an obvious power, a battle of wills and of power
between Rome and Constantinople. According to our author on page 141, there were some contributing factors that made Rome excel. What were those? We just read some of them. They're up on the board. So what are some of the things that people are saying? No, Rome. Power needs to be with Rome. Hail Rome, you know.
Peter.
Okay, it's the fact. Okay, well, Peter came from there. You got, you, and you know what? What Melanie just said, apostolic authority. Don't forget that. Apostolic authority, that's the card they're going to eventually play whenever people are saying, no, we need to look elsewhere. Well, everybody knows this is where Peter and Paul, you know, established the church. And so because of that, you know, this is naturally where we should gravitate back to. So that's one thing. So what else was bolstering Rome as being the centerpiece and having the loudest voice in the room?
It was the hub of all the missionary work.
Oh, missionary work. Yeah, okay. You know, it just seemed to be that's where, you know, as far as being a great place of compassion and mission work, as far as going out and evangelizing, you know, everything leaves Rome and comes back to Rome. Okay, so what else?
It was the political power.
The political power, absolutely it was. Okay, and that's why you have many emperors casting her vote behind Rome and supporting the church at Rome. Okay, what else is listed up here? We've got prestige, we've got, it's just a great place. Rome's a great place. We'll play that card. It's just a
the eternal city.
Okay, the eternal city. Oh, yes. You know, how can you deny the fact that it just has a ring of being authentic and genuine? The eternal city, its reputation. Okay, so these are just things that people are saying. So I want you to put yourself, that frame of mind at that time. Just, could you hear the clamor that was going on? Because you do have two great powerful churches going at one another, saying all power needs to rest here. Both of them were making that argument, okay? And this is what folks are saying. This is their argument as to why they should stand behind Rome. According to our author, Leo I, a Roman bishop, don't confuse him also with the fact that there was a Roman emperor about that time too, okay? But Leo I, a Roman bishop, soon to be viewed as Rome's first pope, okay? Their first official pope. Well, that's the way we view it. They don't view it that way. The Catholic Church views who is their first pope? There you go. Okay. So, but that's based upon our study outside of Catholicism as their first bishop, according to church history. He was the successor, and his view, he was an equal. Even felt like he was greater than Peter. You know, that's very modest of him and humble of him to think that of himself, you know. And Christ gave him that power. Okay, any comments or questions? Anything that you're seeing there that you want to make a remark about or you want to ask a question about? Yes, go ahead.
One thing, too. After Constantine moved the capital of the empire or split it between Constantinople and Rome, started to see a little bit of decay over time of the empire. So bringing power back to Rome was kind of a nostalgic view throughout the empire.
Good point.
Remembering how it once was, how
yes,
we didn't have power.
The glory days, exactly. You know?
Was this after the fall of Rome? I can't
oh, yes.
The timing. This is well after the fall of Rome.
Not yet.
I'm thinking of Jerusalem. No, I thought, wait a minute. No, you're right.
Yeah.
So, and you guys remember when we are talking about a split that takes place between the Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox Church, okay? There are topics that are going to be on the table that are important for us to understand, and one of them was instrumental music, believe it or not, okay? We'll get to that. So, but keep these things in mind as we're looking at this. Any other good comment? Yes, Sharon.
Well, they're saying that he thought he had the same power.
Leo, yeah.
David Peter, but now they think they're like people.
Oh, they absolutely. You know, they are on par. God is speaking through them. Exactly. You know, it is. It's very bizarre, Karen. Go ahead, Carl.
Just a kind of a oddball question here, but
if I was a Catholic and I wanted to learn about church history, could I learn about these events right here and the books that they would have access to? Do you know?
So that's a good question. I've got that question at the end of my lesson.
Okay, I'll hold it.
No, because we might not make it to the end of my lesson, Carl. So I'm glad that you got us there. Thank you. You know, and that's good. You know, so let's talk about this just for a second since you brought it up.
They don't want them to study that.
No, that's right. You know, they discourage that. You're right. Okay, so
their doctrine discourages learning about church history.
And you see that. You see that. Well, they'll tell you what to do, right? They'll tell you what you need to know. That has always been their motive of operation. We will tell you what you need to know, okay?
They're the ones that they interpret the Bible for you.
Yes.
You don't get to interpret it. They tell you.
Yes. Any other comments or thoughts? That's been my experience with that too. As a matter of fact, it's really cool whenever something happens within the church and it's New Testament Christianity and you have someone from that persuasion who witnesses something. I'll just give you an example. A good friend of mine's a Catholic. And you guys remember Xiaopei?
Yeah.
Xiaopei?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Brett.
Yeah.
Xiaopei showed up at my office one afternoon just out of the blue. She was not a Christian, and she just showed up out of the blue. And Craig, a good friend of mine, was stopped in my office. And I need some people to lobby for me to be able to keep Uncle Buck in my office. My wife thinks Uncle Buck needs to go away. You knew who Uncle Buck is,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, so, yeah. It's a good evangelistic tool. He's an 8-point buck. So he stopped in, and my friend stopped in, and he's a Catholic. Okay. And Xiaopei happened to stop in right before about noon, and just as sincere as she could be, she says, "I need to be baptized." And I was like, "Oh, wow." And he was there. So she came into my office and I said, "Well, do you care if Craig?" So I thought this is a good teaching moment because I just wanted to ask her some questions. What's your understanding of the scriptures? Because, you know, kind of coming through the back door, I wanted Craig to hear what she was answering too. You know, and
it was
she
a teaching moment for you.
It was. And it's like, man, I can't miss this. This is golden. So, you know, she's like, I have sin in my life and I just know. I need to be baptized into Christ. And I said, for the remission of my sins. And I said, absolutely. And we're talking about the Bible and the scriptures. I said, wow. And Craig and I said, man, isn't that awesome? He goes, yeah. And I said, hey, I said, can you, I've got a camera. Can you take pictures of it? You know? So he says, well, I'd be happy to. So he was able to watch that baptism of her, scripture baptism of her, and he's taking pictures of her being baptized. And I thought, man, it was really a teachable, moment. But here's what I'm trying to say. That blew him away. Archie, that blew him away. He was like, wow.
Was her background Catholic too? Do you know?
Does anybody know? I'm not 100% sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was or not.
But that would have been an interesting thing if she,
Yeah. Yeah. So. No, that's a good question. I don't know, Carl. Yeah. I'm not sure. But, I'll tell you, it made an impression on him, didn't it, Archie? It did, It made an impression on him. And he still holds that moment near and dear in his heart, okay? So, but, to answer the question with regards to, what's being taught they really try to keep you in the dark. We'll tell you what you need to think and how you need to behave. We'll even forgive you of your sins.
Yeah. Multiple times.
Do they refer to the Bible?
A hymn time. Go get her.
Go ahead, Melanie.
Do they refer? So they don't refer to the Bible all the time, and the members don't read along with.
They have their own Bible.
Things like that.
Yeah, they have their own Bible. They do have a Catholic Bible.
They have printed out things that they go through, and you read it, and you answer back.
Yeah.
Is that a catechism?
Go ahead.
Oh, it's the chanting.
Oh, sorry, I'll come to you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Imogene, go ahead.
What
are they talking about when they say a child reaches a certain age that they are dedicated? What is that?
All right. So, you know, within their particular, and I was invited to a ceremony, you know, like that. And it's, for example, a young boy when he's coming into manhood, okay? And it's a
girls.
Okay. So I was just invited to the guys, okay? And and I'm not a Catholic, so you're going to have to just give me a bogey on that one. So I'll let some of you former Catholics or if you're a current Catholic answer that question. So, Linda.
I was just going to say that I used to work for a Catholic. And they were wanting to keep the doors of their building open. So they picked hours, and he would sit in their church for an hour so that in case somebody came in, there'd be somebody here.
Uh-huh.
So he decided to spend that time reading the Bible. He had never, he was in his 40s, he had never opened the Bible in his life. Mm-hmm. He decided he was going to start in Genesis and read through the whole Bible.
Amazing.
And the things he would come in and say all the mornings. Did you ever read the thing about Lot and his daughters? That is disgusting.
I'm going to tell you, and we'll wrap this up here. My mother-in-law was a Methodist, a devout Methodist, and she started reading the Bible, and she studied herself right out of the Methodist church, right into the boys' mm-hmm. church. So, that Linda, that's what that reminded me of, is that I'm telling you, God's word is powerful enough to convert the soul. If you'll just read it and obey it, it's right there. All right. Thank you for your time and your attention. I appreciate it. You have a great night.
Hey, Scott, you want to talk to anybody?
Mike? Yeah, there's another one. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Absolutely.